Welcome to the Lockdown Dads podcast with me, Ian Dinwiddie, and my co-host, James Miller. We have 46 episodes available for you to explore with us and our amazing guests. Among many fascinating conversations, learn the personal stories and pandemic insights from politicians, PhDs, and an international rock star. If you do enjoy the content, why not visit inspiringdads.co.uk and sign up for our next webinar that explains why supporting new dads at work is the route to gender equality.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Lockdown Dads. I am James Miller, author of Dads Don't Babysit, editor of workingdads.co.uk and father of two children. And I'm joined as always by...
Ian Dinwiddie. I'm the founder of Inspiring Dads, a coaching business that helps stressed dads to balance work and fatherhood. I've got a couple of kids as well. My two are 11 and 8 and they're back at school this week, which has been great for everyone. This week, we're delighted to be joined by a friend of the show, Brian Ballantyne. He sometimes works at Amazon, apparently, but also he's an author. Evidence there. Confessions of a Working Father, great little read. And he is also the co-founder of Men for Inclusion. Brian, welcome to the show.
Very nice to be here. Good to see you both.
So Brian, we kick things off every week asking the same kind of question. How are you?
It's a tough question to ask a man, isn't it? Because often you just want to go, yeah, fine, all good. But it's been a bit of a shit week, really. How would I describe myself? You know, I've been anxious, stressed. I guess the context of that is we just moved into a new house, which is stressful in the snow. Me and my wife seem to have different priorities about the order in which we need to tackle things, which our 14-year-old is transgender, and my wife and I have got different opinions about whether we should pursue that or not. They're talking about suicide. So yeah, it's been quite a stressful week, really, if I'm quite honest.
Well, you've got to be honest. I think that's the best way to be. We're always encouraging people to talk about it. It doesn't get any better if you don't talk about it, do you? I mean, I don't know. I might come on to my tips might feed into some of the stuff we're talking about there and how to resolve it. But yeah, that sounds like a lot to deal with. I mean, you know, moving house would be enough, frankly.
And then working as well. You know, 6 months ago, I picked up a new role in Amazon, now managing teams in India, Europe, and America. So there's like my days are getting stretched. Maybe I'm having to go and fight for my boundaries as well. I used to be going like on several walks every week during the week, and now I've kind of lost that. So I'm just having to kind of fight, put my boundaries back in place. I recognize that I just need to, you know, stop that and start carving out more time for myself. Just saying no to more things as well. You start to feel like you're reaching breaking point. Like a mobile phone when it says like, you know, 0% battery, you need just connect charger. I just feel like I just need to connect my charger and get myself back on track again.
It's something we've come up with time and again in this podcast, haven't we? It's the, you know, the airplane analogy or whatever, however you want to put it. You know, it's to put on your oxygen mask before anybody else, because you're no use to anyone, if you haven't got your own oxygen mask on. So I think that's
exactly
true. And, you know, yeah. The fact that you've clocked that, I think, is, you know, you deserve credit for that. You know, that's when you get caught up in such a lot of stress and anxiety, being able to step back and go, hang on, right, I need to look after myself here. That's, I think,
yeah, so
worthy in itself.
Yeah, because I've spoken to a couple of friends who are on burnout leave or have done burnout, and they had no idea it was coming. And, you know, a doctor had to tell them, like, you've burnt out, and then they just spent a month in bed not able to do anything. Wow. So it's like a kind of this energy credit card that kind of just hits you. So, yeah, I think, you know, I'm not an expert on it, but mental health, especially for men, I think it's pretty important. And it's good to be able to talk to you about it. I think, even just talking about it now, it starts to process that and, you know, feel like it's, you know, it's not the earth shattering thing that it kind of manifests as in your head. So yeah, how are you guys doing?
Just to pick up on that, I think, yeah, absolutely, getting it out loud and talking it through is really important, and particularly with people who perhaps aren't in your household and part of that.
Yeah.
But, you know, feeds into something I keep thinking about with men and friends and stuff like that. I'm not quite sure where those thoughts are going at the moment, but I do think there's something there about men having networks that they can talk to and you know, share their thoughts and not just go, what about football then? Not that there's anything wrong with talking about football. I'm all for that as well. But, you know, there has to be other levels of conversation. But that's something for another day. Maybe we need to think about that.
Yeah, I think that's a big topic. I'm happy to talk about that. But maybe we should let Ian say something. Go on, Ian, come and join the conversation.
Well, I guess for you, Brian, just a quick question is, what sort of plans do you have for the weekend that are going to sort of help you with how you're feeling at the moment, I guess?
Well, again, this is a point of contention. My wife rolled her eyes at me when I'd forgotten we were going to the furniture shop tomorrow to look at sofas, and I was like, hang on a minute, don't roll your eyes, you've got a lot going on. Hope she's not listening to this. Anyway, I've got to go and get a COVID test tomorrow. We need to go to the tip, got to get rid of some stuff. My priority of gardening apparently is not the family priority, so unfortunately don't get to hack at the garden, which is, I know, quite stress
yeah,
relieving.
Yeah, it is.
So, what else? My wife's got a friend coming around on Sunday. Their 11-year-old wants to play with our 12-year-old at Minecraft. So apparently Minecraft's had a big comeback, hasn't it? Like, it was all Fortnite and then Among Us. I don't know how old your kids are, but no, it seems like Minecraft is almost kind of retro now, and like playing with Lego and stuff. So anyway, and also I've got to write an essay. I'm doing like an Open University degree, just, you know, for fun. So I've got to write an essay about something or other. It's in English literature. In fact, it's about Michael Foucault's essay, What is an Author? And I've got to apply that to some 18th century texts. And it's kind of, you know, James and I have both written a book, and like the idea of what is an author and all that kind of stuff. So I've got to write something about that. So yeah, I've got a few bits and bobs going on. Maybe try and go for a walk.
Work in progress. Good. I didn't want to just leave it sort of like that. So just quickly about my work. Like I said, kids are back at school, which has been great. They've really enjoyed it. I've done some video recording this week for the New Dads Accelerator, which is going to be my program that's coming out, my coaching program. We've got a couple of clients. We've got one client lined up to go, and then another one very interested in taking it on. I haven't really promoted it at all. So good to get those videos, because I don't know what it's like. Live like this, really straightforward, I think. Recording, when you know you can edit and come back, much, much harder. Always stopping and starting and recutting, and you know, I didn't like what I said there. I'm going to do that again.
I saw you at the Liverpool fashion show or something. You're on a panel. I just got the link and clicked through.
Yeah,
yeah, I did. We were talking about
pandemic and how the pandemic had affected women in particular, and I was invited on to get involved. So yeah, I did have a little bit of a chat. It was all good, but I found it quite tiring this week. I had to leave a Facebook group that I was in. It was male-only Facebook group, and I got a little bit tired of a minority of men who thought that women who were afraid of their personal safety wasn't of a concern to them at all, and reasons why. And it's not about, you know, what about men and all this kind of thing. It got a bit tiring. I had to leave. Wasn't good for my emotional state. So yeah, sometimes it's better just to leave it and go. I can't reason with these people. So.
Yeah, it's like on social media, like the number of people who actually change their mind based on the social media posts is pretty low. And like, I find social media quite stressful. You see something and someone disagrees with you and you think, can I be bothered to get into an argument with someone I don't even know? Yeah. So sometimes I just like ignore it all. You just got to walk away sometimes, haven't you, picky battles?
I did. I might go back, but for the moment, I'm just like, I can't be here. I'm going to do things differently. But anyway, Brian, it's great to have you on the show. James.
How are you, James?
How are you, James? Show us your badge.
That's a first, isn't it? That's a first.
Just on.
Yeah, nice.
I'm just aware of Brian's timing for today and his time restriction.
Don't worry about that.
I was doing fine this week, and then you just snubbed me, and now my week's going right off.
I did.
Purely for the sake of completeness, I'll jump in and just, fine. I did think the things you're talking about, right? We need to leave some good space for the tips at the end, because my tip fits with I can't believe I've picked this tip. It's brilliant. You just said, and what Brian just said, it's going to be amazing.
I saw you writing something there, and I was like, oh, he's got
feel
something,
like we've set some it gold up. There. Yeah, it's going to feel like we've totally set it up. But yeah, you know, fine. Yeah, as you say, kids are back at school. I think it's interesting what we've just said about, you know, how we're all feeling, and COVID is dropping down the list. You know, it is part of the atmosphere, isn't it? You know, you're moving houses, Brian says, you've got a lot going on. And then that's all within the COVID atmosphere as well, which you didn't even mention in the first instance, but it's just there and just adds to the stress and the worry. But it's interesting that it's sort of beginning to drop down the, it still exists, but, you know, it's not your number one worry anymore, sort of thing.
You're kind of living with it, aren't we? I mean, it's, yeah. Compared to a year ago when a lockdown started, you're just kind of living with it, and you're so used to putting a mask on when you go to the shop now, and doesn't still feels like you're going to hold it up at gunpoint, but
yes. Yeah. But I mean, I think it's been a bad week all round for anybody who's interested in this sort of stuff, because obviously, particularly in the UK, I mean, we had International Women's Day, and it's been pretty awful since then, frankly, in terms of the government doesn't give a toss about equalities, and various people have left their LGBT advisory group. Boris Johnson's not taking paternity leave, it turns out. Boris Johnson told a fib. Who could believe it? That was a bit depressing. And then, of course, we had the Sarah Everard stuff, and as you say, and all the things about, you know, not all men and all that. And I think just avoid social media on that front, I think, is probably, there's an early tip for you, because it's just, you don't get anything out of it. I think there's fundamental questions we all need to grapple with, but you're not going to get any use out of Twitter when it comes to grappling with fundamental issues on anything, I would suggest. So yeah, and then my back, I mean, my back seems a bit, doesn't seem very interesting.
I had a bad back a few weeks ago, actually, and it's really frustrating.
That's the interesting thing. It's like COVID in the sense that I know it's going to be over. I know it's going to get better, but it's not yet. And that's really frustrating. But Do you know what? I think my back is not that interesting. I suggest anybody watching this or listening to it, if they want to put a comment saying they really want to hear the story of my back, then we'll have it. We'll do it next week. But I think we'll just, suffice to say, it's not cured yet.
Well, soon.
So there we go. That's how I am. Sorry, Ian. Go back. Now we'll go back to what you wanted to ask Brian.
I've lost my train of thought now. Brian, this section of the conversation we call The Path. And obviously when we introduced you as co-founder of Men for Inclusion and also an author, and I wonder what came first for you? The book that you wrote was Confessions of a Working Father, which I believe was off a series of blog posts. So tell us about how you came to be interested in fatherhood and inclusion more generally.
Yeah, and I was, as we were approaching this, I was just thinking back to when I became a father. My kids are 12 and 14 now, so it was a while ago. And it's funny because in running up to being a father, I was part of the Baby Centre Dads Only moderator group. So I was just looking on Baby Centre UK, and they've still got this dads group, and it's still a very similar kind of approach, like a few dads not saying much and loads of women like curious to know what they think and giving advice. So it's kind of always quite interested, in being a dad and being an active dad and being part of a kind of community and not necessarily finding it. I've always, wanted to be an active dad, and, my wife has always earned slightly more than me. So, naturally shared responsibilities. I moved to Luxembourg to follow her career. We kind of moved back and forth to London and then back again. So I've just, it's kind of shocked me, the reaction of other people and the working culture to, dads who want to see their kids or help them get home from nursery when they're babies and clearly they can't go on their own or the partner's busy. So I've just been a bit shocked really when, there was me, leaving work at a time when I could collect my kids or do things. And then other colleagues were kind of shocked by that or surprised or, even commenting on it. Even to the point, I moved back to London for a few years and, a CEO we had in a former company, he encouraged us all to get on Foursquare. I don't know if you remember it, you'd check in somewhere and be the mayor of a shop or something. Do you remember Foursquare? It's like talking about MySpace or Friends Reunited. But it was before you could check in on Facebook. And so I was like, all right, I'll try it out. So in the morning, I checked in, dropping my kids at the nursery and checked in at the tube, like whizzed over from Arsenal over to Paddington. And then I got to work and he was there looking at his phone saying, why are you late? It just kind of accused me of being late. He'd been tracking my movements. I was like, oh, I thought you asked us to do this for a bit of fun, not so you could track my movements. And this is a CEO who has a place in Marlborough, rents a flat by Paddington, and then walks around the office at 8 a.m. going, where is everyone? So it's just like, and you arrive and there's, it's all hot desking, which sounds exciting, but there's no desks left for you and you've got to go and sit miles away. And then your boss says, where are you? Why aren't you sitting next to me? And then you've got to rush back. And it just didn't feel like it was, we moved back to Luxembourg just because it was better set up. But, I was just really surprised because parents looking after their kids and working, like it's been happening for a long time. Why, it's a lot harder than I thought it would be.
And then the book, how did that come about then? So you obviously blogged about it. you know, presumably you got a good reaction to those blogs, such that you realized there was a constituency out there that weren't like that boss and that were genuinely interested in doing things differently or doing things normally. I don't know how you'd phrase it.
Yeah, no, it's funny. And I guess you mentioned inclusion and Men for Inclusion. I guess that's how I came to write the book. So, you know, I've been involved in, you know, diversity, inclusion, voluntary work. And, you know, part of my job to some extent, you know, for about 20 years with my family, I come from like a mixed family of mixed disability. And, you know, there's other factors where we've had to kind of, you know, champion certain people's rights. And yeah, and I think in the workplace as well, just kind of, you know, noticing some groups, you know, marginalized or underrepresented and being like an ally, just basically being a decent person and, you know, making sure everyone gets included. And I was working and, you know, in a role where we were trying to get more women in software engineering roles. And it just seemed like these big echo chambers. There was Women in Technology Amsterdam with 2,000 women and 20 men. They're all being told the benefits of women in technology and they're all nodding. It's like, well, of course, they are women in technology and a load of recruiters. So of course they know that. And they're like, well, where are the men? I'm like, well, this is Women in Technology. Probably didn't occur to them to attend. Except for a few allies. I was just, you know, thinking like, how can we get more women in tech? And, you know, I was talking to someone called Nadia Nagamutu and, you know, her research shows that, you know, women get ahead not by attending lean in circles. Well, I'm sure they help everyone, but it's where the men in their lives lean in with the three C's, cleaning, you know, childcare and cooking and everything. And so, you know, my motivation for writing these posts and this book wasn't to necessarily help men, but was to help accelerate women's economic advancement. When people said, oh, you're a champion for working dads, that was, you know, a side effect. And I was like, oh. And, you know, this is the first time I've started being in events like this, which are actually focused on me. I've always been doing it to help someone else. And I think men, you know, white men in particular, you know, that having a space where we can actually be open about struggles that we've got or support that we need was quite new to me, really. And, you know, had to shake off a lot of guilt about that. And who am I to complain? I don't know if either of you have experienced that, but that's kind of how I got into it, just like supporting inclusion. And now we've kind of set up this group with a couple of other guys called Men for Inclusion, you know, recognizing, you know, at the same time, a lot of men aren't in the inclusion conversation, or if they are, they're not necessarily approaching it in the right way. And, you know, what can we do to kind of, you know, improve that and get more men into the conversation?
I think it's really important. I think I went along to one of the first events. My pleasure. And one of the things that struck me is that the name change, it's changed slightly, subtly, hasn't it, since
it first started.
And I just wondered what kind of feedback and what kind of conversations went on that led to that name changing slightly.
Yeah, so at the time we did, you know, when I you know, when we put it together, we had a name, Male Allies for Gender Equality, MAGE, which I quite liked as an acronym. You know, I think originally, you know, me and the other guys had been talking about allies for women. I was like, well, it's not for women, it's for gender equality. So we came up with that, and then we had a panel around, you know, do we actually need allies? And then, you know, as a group, we started looking at, you know, the four P's of marketing, you know, product, price, place, and promotion. And we're like, if we're going to do this, we need to be more focused on what we want to do. And then there was, you know, thinking more broadly than gender. So, you know, thinking about, you know, inclusion more broadly and, you know, male allies, or just men, really. All men can be involved in inclusion. You don't need a special badge to get involved in this. So that's where it came. And, you know, once we changed from this male allies thing, which I always find a bit uncomfortable, to Men for Inclusion, I thought, oh, I can get behind that, updated my LinkedIn profile. You know, I'm still working Amazon, but I had 300 people say, wow, you quit Amazon, that's exciting. And I was like, oh, well, if I did quit, then sounds like it's a good idea one day, but yeah, maybe I'll go part-time at some point. But yeah, that's how it all kind of came about. That's how we changed the name, just to kind of broaden it. I think there's still a focus on gender, getting gender back on the agenda. But you know, with a kind of intersectional, kind of broader view of inclusion.
How much of that sort of view about inclusion is driven by your experiences with your own children?
Yeah, I mean, like some of it came from my own family. So, you know, my stepmother, my mum died when I was six, and my dad remarried, and we had like a mixed family. And so, you know, my stepmom is a big advocate for, you know, women's rights. And also my youngest brother has cerebral palsy. So, you know, disability rights, you know, in my sister, in my family, there's, you know, different sexualities as well. And coming through to my kids now, I mean, you know, Daniel, my 12-year-old, is very much a boy's boy. And whereas, you know, Gabby, my 14-year-old, is, you know, gender non-conforming, transgender. And so, you know, when it's your younger brother, when it's your sister, when it's one of your own children going through these things, it really kind of, you know, comes from a deep kind of heartfelt place, rather than this kind of theoretical, you know, diversity of thought, better innovation, better for the bottom line. I mean, that's not my top priority. It's more about people I care about having a shit time in life because things aren't organized in an inclusive way. So yeah, for me, it definitely comes from an emotional kind of caring place. Yeah, so, you know, you're feeling some of these things firsthand.
Is there a, this is maybe a big question and the answer might be no to it, but is there a sort of overarching definition of allyship? Because allyship is certainly something that, you know, I've been talking about coming out of the COVID thing, and in terms of, you know, the future workplace, there's a lot to be said for allies, you know, between men, women, in sort of more general way, more empathy, and that leads to allyship. And obviously there's been a lot of talk about allyship this week around, you know, women not feeling safe in the UK and how men should be allies. And, you know, that's one part of it. I don't know. Is it possible to come up with a sort of universal definition of what allyship and being an ally means? And if so, what is it?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, I guess, what the impression I have is that it's someone who's going to advocating or supporting a cause for a particular demographic of which they're, you know, not part of that demographic. So if I'm advocating for LGBTQ rights, or if I'm advocating for women, or for disability, or for, you know, Black Lives Matter, or for people with autism, you know, or someone who's a veteran, or, you know, someone, you know, with PTSD or something. I know these are all things I'm not experiencing myself, but I'm supporting someone else. So, I mean, you could bring in like a military analogy, couldn't you? Like the ally is kind of supporting someone else who was under attack, you know, even though they themselves weren't under attack. Yeah, it's very difficult, you know, and it can be used in positive and negative ways. Like, you know, it's not ally, it's advocate we want. And like, is it? But yeah, and then the definition of ally, I mean, what do you both think? What would your definition be?
Yeah, I think that's a good definition. I think the good thing about that definition is it leaves it open for how that manifests itself. So what that actually means in practical terms can differ according to the person, the circumstances, the group that you are standing up for, and, you know, in what scenario are you standing up for, whether that is you're walking a female friend home from the pub, imagine going to the pub, or whether that is, you know, walking into a meeting and saying, hello, there's only one woman in this meeting, that's not cool. Yeah, I think it depends on the situation. I think that's a good definition because it leaves it open. I don't know. I'm sure you have thoughts on it, Ian.
Yeah, I think it also comes from a place of seeking empathy and not just sort of taking the world as you see it that benefits you. And I think it's being aware, and I think actively seeking out awareness of other people's struggles that aren't your own, and therefore I'm trying to do something about it, and not just saying, well, I'm all right, you know, it doesn't affect me, you know, this whole, you know, the concept this week about it's not all men. Well, of course it's not all men, but, you know, one of the things that, you know, I was explaining how I actively walk on the other side of the road if I'm walking home late at night from the train station, if I know there's a woman in front of me, I will cross the road to avoid coming up behind her, for instance. And just being aware of those things and then doing something about it, hopefully. And, even if it's something relatively minor.
Mm. Yeah, I think
totally.
But I think it's also a work in progress. I think that's another key thing about allyship is that, you know, that is a good definition you come up with it, Brian, but also you'd be wrong to say, well, that's the definition of allyship. Now I know what it means, because it will evolve and it will change. And as I say, it depends on the circumstances. I think that's a crucial part of it, is that, you know, being open to other people saying, well, this is what allyship means to me.
Okay. Yeah, totally. conversation.
Should we move on to the tips? Because I know we're slightly pushed for time. And I'll go first, because this fits in really well with what we've been talking about. I've been saving this one up for a few weeks, but strangely enough, it just is perfect this week. It's a book called Conflicted by Ian Leslie. Ian Leslie is the king of centrist dads, right? He is, basically he's my new god. There's a bit in it about Waco and the negotiations around that. I would go and join a wacky cult led by Ian Leslie, because he is, a cult of centrist dads. Why arguments are tearing us apart and how they can bring us together. It's just really interesting stuff about how to disagree well. The fundamental point of it is that disagreement is part of the human condition, and it is how you actually achieve, how you move things forward, is disagree. But of course, you've got to disagree well not shout at each other on the internet. That's not very helpful. And it just, the stuff we've just been talking about, for example, Facebook groups where there's people being idiots, you know, do you engage with them? Do you try and disagree well with them? I don't know the answer to this. I tried to disagree well with some people in the virtual pub last night, and there came a point at which I said, do you know what? That is not true, and I won't let an untruth, you know, something that is palpably untrue pass. Ian Leslie would probably throw me out of his cult of conflicted for that, because he's like, no, you've got to listen to people and yada, yada, yada. But I think it's a really interesting book, and I think it doesn't, it applies across everything we've spoken about. You know, Brian's talking about domestic strife about whether to go to the sofa shop or not. You know, I think that there are lessons from how to disagree well there. No, you don't go to the sofa shop. Anyway, our sofa shops are all shut, so we don't have to worry about those.
First world,
you know,
problems.
I think it's the stuff we talk about, the stuff about if you want to, you know, forward the dad's agenda, which we all do, if, and I appreciate you might have different definitions of what the dad's agenda is or what that means. I'm using it as a very broad shorthand. You're going to have to disagree with people. You're going to have people who say, well, men don't matter. Dads aren't the important thing. We need to be progressing women. And you have to make the case and say, well, no, if we look after dads, you will progress women. You know, it's all connected. I think disagreeing better is really important going forward in terms of, you know, whether that's in your household, whether that is in your workplace, whether that is, you know, in the public sphere and all the stuff that's been going on this week about, you know, whether you want to argue with somebody about not all men. I think it's a really interesting book. I haven't quite finished it yet, but you'll see I've got my highlighter in it. That's how seriously I'm taking it. It has to be pretty serious for me to highlight it. So that's my tip this week. How to disagree better, I think, is a really important skill that we all need to learn. And you can get it off Amazon if you want, I suppose. Although I got mine off bookshop.org to protect
all good booksellers.
Yeah, to help the local bookshop.
Absolutely. You mentioned something. Did you say centrist dads? I hadn't heard that term before.
Oh, has this not made it over to Luxembourg?
Could you enlighten me?
This was the Corbyn era in British politics, that the Corbynistas would use it as an insult against people like me, centrist dads. So middle-aged, middle-class people who are not idiots. You know, I wear the badge of centrist dad with pride. I'm like, yeah, I'm a centrist dad. Bring it. You know, I believe in the centre and I believe in being reasonable and, you know, disagreeing well. Whereas obviously a lot of the Corbynistas believe in, I don't know, really burning down capital or something. I don't know what they believe in. But centrist dad was kicking around as an insult, but I very much wear it as a badge of pride. I, you know, out and proud centrist dad.
Very good.
But yeah, I don't know if Ian Leslie would as well, but he liked me as he's that way inclined. So yeah, that's my tip. The tips have slightly changed to recommendations recently. They're supposed to be tips about, you know, I don't know, how to cope with lockdown and how to cope with parenting and stuff like that. We've slightly veered into recommendations sometimes, but maybe Ian's about to prove me a lie. Okay. Ian, what's your tip this week?
It's both a recommendation and a tip. So previous guest of ours, Rachel Veich, recorded a video and she talked about how to communicate with your kids and ask good questions to your children now that they're back at school. And she used a great analogy, and we'll put a link in the comments. She talked about the rose, the thorn and the banana peel. So talk about something that's gone really well, which is the rose. Talk about something that a thorn, which hasn't gone so well, and something that was funny, that was a banana peel. And start by presenting your own version of that, and then start to have a conversation with your kids who, you know, now they're back to school, how's school gone? It's all right. And try and break that cycle. So we'll put a comment in there, but that was a good little tip, I thought.
Yeah, I like that. I've heard roses and thorns before, and I think when I read Barack Obama's book, he talks about doing roses and thorns, but the banana peel, that's a good addition. I think we've tried it with our kids and it's very much, yeah, sure, whatever.
You've got to pick the right point, I think. That's the other part of that.
Yeah.
Straight after school. Interestingly, this, I don't know, it might come up as a recommendation further down the road, but my daughter's reading a book about for teenagers about why your parents are so annoying. Well, part of it is, you know, there's a reason why when you get home from school, kids are sort of not in control at school. So if you then say to them the minute they get in the door, how was school? That just reminds them of not being in control. So they don't want to talk about it at that point. So according to this book, and it's written by a sort of psychology fella, it's sort of, you know, leave it till later in the day when they don't want, you know, they might be a bit more keen to talk about it. But Rachel Vecht is the queen of tips, isn't she? We had the circle of control a few weeks ago. That was one of hers.
That's a great one.
And of course, she's been on the podcast. And yes, I've been doing rose thorns and banana peels this week with varying degrees of success. But, you know, I think it's worth a try. It's worth a try.
I found that with Daniel, maybe when he was a bit younger, walking him home from school, and definitely how was your day is not good. And to be honest, when I finished a day at work, I don't want to talk about it. It's pretty boring. I'm just glad to be over. So I just started saying, what are you looking forward to this evening? Or what do you want to do when you get home? Which is what you would ask an adult. he's like, oh, playing on Minecraft or doing this. But that's definitely a better way. And, you know, I kind of miss those days, walking my kids home from school. I don't do it anymore. So, now every morning, like my kids are going to school one week off, 1 week in. But no, make a point, like with Daniel, he's at secondary school now, seeing him off at the door, waving him off, and just kind of like spending a few moments watching him go away, because it's one day that's not going to happen anymore, and he'll be off. So I don't mean, my kids grow up so fast, and, I think for a while I was lamenting, that when they were smaller and we're doing bedtime stories, now I'm just trying to like capture all these moments, these fleeting moments and cherishing them. So I'd encourage dads to do that. There's plenty of time to work, but these kind of small moments where you can kind of capture your kids. And so that's my recommendation.
It's a good one. It's one for the ages, but it's one that I think you need to say it. You need to remind yourself of it. I think it's a really important one that it's very easy to lose sight of. Like all the best recommendations, like all the best ideas, it's simple, but you sometimes lose sight of it. So I think it's really a very good tip.
I think on a disagreeing one as well, my wife and I were just disagreeing about a certain point, which is quite a few fireworks going on. And ultimately, I was just like, right, let me figure out where she's coming from. So there's something that she wanted me to read. And so I just stayed up like till midnight and read it. And then the next day, I didn't agree with it all, but at least I could see where she was coming from. And it meant a lot to her that I tried to figure out where she was coming from. So, I still disagreed, but at least I could, I could understand. I was like, oh, okay, something's clicked about why she thought things a certain way. And I could then make her feel understood and then disagree with her.
You need to read the book. Forget it. The tip doesn't apply to Brian because he's basically doing it already. I mean, that's the point. It's not that disagreeing itself is bad. It's about doing it well and making it productive. And
okay, I need to read the book. You've got me interested.
You've done it. You're doing it already. You should have written the book, not read it. Anyway, sorry. We've got important things. You've got to get off this. It must be time for Ian to do the credits.
It is. Brian, we talked about Confessions of a Working Father, which people can get from all good bookshops, hopefully, but certainly from Amazon. Where can people go if they want to connect with you and learn more about what you do in Men for Inclusion?
They can connect with me on LinkedIn. And with Men for Inclusion, we've actually just launched a website. It's still kind of, in draft form, but it's live. So, I'm trying to cut down the amount of time I spent on LinkedIn. So if I don't reply to you straight away, then don't worry. But LinkedIn's probably a great place to connect with me. Feel free to just send me a connection request or a message. Hopefully hear from some people and happy to connect with other dads.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show and talking to us about your path and your journey. James, thank you for sharing how your week went. I'm glad we got that in as well. And hopefully next week we will actually meet up, because I did turn James down this week. I thought the weather was a bit ropey. Actually, we got loads of rain down here about the time when we were due to meet. So maybe I was right. Anyway, so we will do that. We will do that next week. So thank you very much, everyone, for watching and listening. This has been episode number 37 of Lockdown Dads. We'll be back next week. We have a few more weeks left. I think we have two more episodes left before we break for Easter, and we will see what happens after that. But do give it a like and subscribe if you've enjoyed the content, and we will see you again next week. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Lockdown Dads podcast with me, Ian Dinwiddie, and my co-host, James Miller. We have 45 episodes available for you to explore with us and our amazing guests. If you enjoyed the content, why not visit inspiringdads.co.uk and sign up for our next webinar that explains why supporting new dads at work is the route to gender equality.